Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today in this episode, we're going to be following along the digestion theme, and I'm going to be talking about the gallbladder. If you have listened to me in various other episodes of this podcast, you probably would have heard me say that chronic fatigue is ultimately the result of not being able to produce enough ATP, which is the body's energy currency, which is made in the mitochondria. And when we experience lack of ATP, there are multiple different mechanisms that contribute to reaching the same end point. So in this particular episode, we'll be talking about gallbladder health generally, but also how gallbladder health can be an impact on digestive health as a whole. If you listen to the previous episode on SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, I speak a little bit about the gallbladder there. We'll be looking at how the gallbladder can impact health as a whole, digestion as a whole, and then fatigue more specifically, or the various mechanisms by which poor gallbladder health can be a contributing factor in this poor ATP production. So before we dive into the episode, I would love to just invite you to make sure you have left a review. That could be a written review on iTunes. It could be that you just leave a review on Spotify or another player that you use. I think iTunes and Spotify are the most popular ones. And that you maybe share the podcast or a specific episode of the podcast with someone that you think it may benefit or help. Your shares and your reviews help more people find the podcast. And if you're somebody who has really got a lot from the show, it's the opportunity to give back to the community and help other people find that little piece of support that they need, something just to make their day a little bit easier or to change the complete trajectory of their day-to-day experience as a whole. So I'd love to invite you to do that now. Take a moment, take a pause, and then let's talk all about the gallbladder. So let's start by looking at what is the gallbladder and what does it do? The gallbladder is a small pear-shaped organ which is located just beneath the liver in the upper right side of the abdomen. It is part of the digestive system and it plays a role in the storage and concentration of a substance called bile, which is a digestive fluid which is produced by the liver. So the gallbladder and the liver are quite closely related. The gallbladder plays a role in the digestive system, and its main function is to store and concentrate bile, which is produced by the liver, and then this is involved in the digestion and the absorption of fats, specifically the fats that we're eating in our diet. However, healthy gallbladder function may also be important for additional functions, such as maintaining a healthy balance of bacteria in the gut, regulating the gut immune system, and supporting the clearance of toxins from the body. So there can be links here with gallbladder health and the microbiome, for example, or the immune system, for example, which may be relevant if you have an autoimmune condition, or the clearance of toxins, which may be relevant if you have a toxic overload, or perhaps if you're dealing with mold. So here I will just summarize the role of the gallbladder in the various digestive processes. The first is bile production. So the liver is continuously producing bile, which is a yellow-green fluid composed of water, electrolytes, bile acids, cholesterol, and a substance known as bilirubin, which you may have seen sometimes on blood test results. Bile acids specifically are essential for the digestion and absorption of fats. But instead of releasing bile directly into the small intestine, the liver secretes it into the gallbladder for storage. The gallbladder then concentrates the bile by removing the water and electrolytes, and that makes it more potent and effective in breaking down fats. So here, for example, if someone didn't have a gallbladder because their gallbladder was removed, they may not be able to concentrate the bile, which makes it less potent, which makes the body perhaps less able to digest and absorb fats effectively. We then need to release the bile. So when we consume a meal containing fats, the gallbladder contracts and releases the concentrated bile into the small intestine through the common bile duct. This process is triggered by a hormone known as cholecystokinin, or CCK, which is released in response to the presence of fatty acids and amino acids in the small intestine. So basically, we eat food, the eating of food, specifically proteins and fats, triggers the release of the CCK, which then tells the gallbladder to release the concentrated bile. The next step is emulsification of fats. So bile plays a crucial role in emulsifying the fats, which means breaking them down into smaller droplets. This process increases the surface area of the fats and makes them easier for the digestive enzymes to work on them. The emulsification is essential for the action of pancreatic lipase, an enzyme which breaks down fats into fatty acids and glycerol for absorption. Emulsified fats and fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E, and vitamin K are then absorbed in the small intestine. So not only do we need to have this healthy gallbladder function to produce the bile to then emulsify the fats so that the pancreatic enzymes can then start to digest the fats, but we also do this so that we can digest and absorb fat-soluble nutrients, some of which are going to be very important for health, like vitamin D. So the gallbladder's role in releasing bile at the right time is really important to ensure efficient digestion and absorption of fats from the diet and fat-soluble nutrients. Proper fat digestion is crucial for obtaining energy and essential nutrients from the diet. So the gallbladder's primary function is to store and concentrate the bile, which is essential for the digestion and absorption of fats in the small intestine. And this process is critical for our overall health and well-being because we need fats for energy and we need vitamins and minerals as cofactors for various biochemical reactions, which may also impact our energy as well. So now you understand a little bit about the gallbladder and a little bit about its roles. Here are just some common issues that can affect the gallbladder. The most common problems are gallstones or cholecystitis, which is inflammation of the gallbladder. We can also get biliary colic, which is characterized by sudden and intense pain in the upper abdomen, typically caused by temporary obstruction of a bile duct by a gallstone. And the pain may subside when the gallbladder passes or is dislodged. We can also get a dysfunctional gallbladder known as biliary dyskinesia. And some people may experience gallbladder dysfunction without the presence of gallstones. And the gallbladder in this case may not contract properly, and that affects its ability to release the bile. This condition can also be associated with pain and discomfort. We can get gallbladder polyps. And gallbladder polyps are abnormal growths on the inner lining of the gallbladder. Most of these polyps will be non-cancerous, but some could potentially become cancerous over time, and polyps can be asymptomatic or cause pain and discomfort. We can get gallbladder sludge. So gallbladder sludge consists of a mixture of particles, including cholesterol crystals and calcium crystals, which can accumulate in the gallbladder. It may predispose individuals to the formation of gallstones and other gallbladder issues, so we may see sludge before we get to the gallstone stage. Gallbladder sludge is a consequence of not releasing bile salts adequately, and it can also cause dysbiosis. For example, it can be a predisposing factor to small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And then finally, gallbladder cancer. Although gallbladder cancer is relatively rare, it can occur, and it's often diagnosed at an advanced stage due to the lack of early symptoms. Risk factors for gallbladder cancer can include age, gender, gallstones, and other medical conditions. So obviously it's important to note that the symptoms of gallbladder issues can overlap with other digestive and abdominal conditions. And persistent or severe symptoms should be evaluated by your healthcare professional for an accurate diagnosis and appropriate management. There's various different options in which we can support gallbladder health, and these include lifestyle changes, medications, or in severe cases, surgical interventions such as gallbladder removal. However, just removing the gallbladder doesn't necessarily mean that there may not be other supportive mechanisms that we need to take to ensure optimal health of the individual. So that's a little bit about what can go wrong, so to speak, with the gallbladder. But let's look at what predisposes us to gallbladder dysfunction in the first place. And in my early years of training, and this is going back a very long time now, possibly about 15 or 16 years, we learned about the three Fs. And the three Fs were used in reference to the risk of gallstones and gallbladder issues. And these Fs were: you're at increased risk if you're a female, fat or overweight, and 40 plus. But in reality, there are actually more risk factors for gallbladder dysfunction than these three Fs alone. And additional risk factors might include rapid weight loss, being sedentary, pregnancy due to the changes in hormones associated with pregnancy, having a high-fat diet, having a high cholesterol diet, having a low-fiber diet, having a family history of gallstones, having diabetes, as insulin promotes gallstone formation, taking certain medications, specifically estrogen-related therapies such as the oral contraceptive pill, being Mexican-American, being Native American — this was obviously from an American-based resource — and poor tolerance of the ketogenic diet. So those are quite a few different factors there. And one of the things I'd like to hone in on in a little bit more detail, because I know that many women listen to this podcast, is estrogen and the gallbladder. Because there is a well-established link between estrogen and gallbladder function. Estrogen can influence the composition of the bile and impact the gallbladder's contractility, and therefore this can contribute to the formation of gallstones. This is one of the reasons why hormone replacement therapy, or specifically things like the oral contraceptive pill, can increase the risk of gallbladder dysfunction. Women who experience high levels of estrogen, often referred to as estrogen dominance, may be at risk for gallbladder dysfunction. And estrogen dominance doesn't always mean high total levels of estrogen. It can also be high levels relative to the amount of progesterone that is being produced, even when estrogen is in a normal or even a low range. But those with higher total levels of estrogen with normal progesterone may also be at the greatest risk. So when we're looking at symptoms for estrogen dominance, this is something I've actually spoken about in a previous podcast on how to have better periods with CFSME. But we may be wanting to look for, obviously, high estrogen in blood work or lab work, but a pear-shaped body, storing high body fat on the hips and the thighs and the backs of the arms, relative to the stomach, having heavy or painful periods, experiencing breast tenderness, experiencing cyclical mood swings, fatigue, which is such a general symptom, but it could be included here, sleep difficulties, having a history of uterine fibroids or endometriosis, acne or skin sensitivity. Because the gallbladder is also important in binding toxins transformed by the liver and carrying them out of the gut in the stool, which we call phase 3 detoxification, this can create a vicious cycle where estrogen dominance impacts gallbladder dysfunction, and gallbladder dysfunction may enhance estrogen dominance because there is poor clearance of estrogen from the body. And this was something that I would say that I experienced in my own kind of mold exposure piece of the puzzle, so to speak. I think I've always been somebody who's been on more of the estrogen dominant side. I definitely resonate with the pear-shaped body. I do tend to store the bulk of my body fat around my buttocks and my tops of my thighs, as well as the backs of my arms. At times, I've had very heavy and painful periods. This was definitely worse during my fatigue days, as was the cyclical mood swings, the fatigue. And once I had a laparoscopy for endometriosis, which came back as negative, which is obviously a relief. But there are a lot of clues there that I am a much more estrogen dominant type of person. And in my own fatigue journey, when I was dealing with mold at one point in time, I did test my blood estrogen levels and they were quite high. And I suspect there was this link here for me with the mold and the toxicity, increasing strain on the liver and gallbladder, and then that also driving up hormonal levels, and that then further creating strain on the liver and gallbladder, and so on and so forth. So it was quite a bit to unpick in terms of my journey, in terms of dealing with the mold, supporting the liver, supporting the gallbladder, regulating hormones again, a lot of moving pieces of the puzzle. But I share this because it might be something, if you are a woman and you're experiencing something similar, they might be your pieces of the puzzle that you need to unpick. And you may be curious to look at some of the resources around hormone detoxification that are on this podcast and on my blog. So let's go into how you know if gallbladder dysfunction is a problem for you. And there are many signs and symptoms of possible gallbladder dysfunction. Obviously, some of these signs and symptoms may overlap or may be due to other causes, but the possibility includes bloating and distension, burping after fatty meals, upper back and abdominal pain or right-sided pain, chronic digestive complaints, symptoms that get worse after eating fatty or greasy foods, fish oil burps. I know, again, I would sometimes, if I eat smoked mackerel, I would then feel like I was burping up smoked mackerel for the rest of the day. Another sign that I wasn't digesting fat so well. Nausea and vomiting in some cases. Diarrhea. Pale colored stools. Yellowing of the skin and eyes, often referred to as jaundice. Dark urine. Unexplained weight loss. Fatigue. Shoulder pain on the right hand side. So many people often ask, is there a blood test I can do for my gallbladder? And blood testing will often not show up with abnormal results unless the case is very extreme. And obviously we want to intervene before we get to a very extreme case. Therefore, the best way to know if there are sludge or stones in your gallbladder is to have a gallbladder ultrasound. But early sludge may not even be detected in an ultrasound. But there can be those other signs and symptoms that I've mentioned here, particularly things like the fish burps, burping in general, the abdominal pain, the right-sided pain, and some of the other things that we've already discussed. So now I guess the big question is, how is the gallbladder connected with chronic fatigue? And as I've said already, is that chronic fatigue is the consequence of poor energy availability due to poor production of adenosine triphosphate, also known as ATP. And that ATP is produced in the mitochondria, which is the body's energy factory of the cell. But there are multiple different mechanisms by which the production of ATP can be impacted. And often in the case of chronic fatigue syndrome and other fatigue-related conditions, there isn't just one mechanism, but there's several all creating the end result. And so due to the role that the gallbladder plays in the digestive system and overall metabolic function, this could be one of the many mechanisms involved in poor ATP production. The first major reason is nutrient digestion and absorption. You know already now that the gallbladder is really important for concentrating bile and then releasing it into the small intestine, where we need it to support the digestion of fats, which we then use for fuel and energy, and for the absorption of fat-soluble nutrients. So proper gallbladder function ensures that we efficiently digest fats and that we are able to emulsify the fats, and the bile then allows for digestive enzymes to break them down further into their absorbable components. So efficient digestion supports the body's energy production and nutrient utilization. So signs of poor absorption that you can look for might be low cholesterol levels in a blood test, low vitamin D despite supplementation. So for example, if I'm tracking vitamin D with a client and maybe I meet them for the first time, their vitamin D is low. I put them on a vitamin D supplement, and then we test them and 6 months later and it's not really moved that much, then we might be thinking, okay, you know, is there something going on here? Is there potentially a gallbladder issue? And especially if we have other information, for example, like high fecal fats in a stool test, that might starting to be painting the picture that there might be something going on with fat digestion and absorption. There maybe is some sort of gallbladder issue. Other signs can be a low platelet count or an inability to maintain a healthy body weight. Because if we can't digest and absorb our fats, we can't get those calories, then we can be in a calorie deficit, and that can be a cause of weight loss. Another link between chronic fatigue and gallbladder health is digestive health as a whole. So gallbladder issues, such as the presence of gallstones or inflammation, can affect the normal flow of bile, leading to digestive issues. Disruption in the digestive processes may contribute to issues such as indigestion, bloating, and discomfort, all of which may contribute to systemic inflammation, which essentially is a low-grade activation of the immune system, which can drain the body's energy. Bile released by the gallbladder influences the composition of the gut microbiota, and this is the community of organisms that live in the digestive tract. An imbalance in the gut microbiota has been linked to various health issues, including inflammatory conditions and metabolic disorders. So bile salts may bind to receptors in the gut, and they can also help to regulate intestinal inflammation. So there's a lot of ways in which gallbladder health can be connected to overall digestive health. And given that there's such a strong connection between the gut and the brain and the rest of the body, what's happening in the gallbladder may be impacting the gut and then may be impacting the whole system. Then we may want to consider the role of the gallbladder in detoxification. The gallbladder works in conjunction with the liver, and both organs play vital roles in detoxification and in metabolism. A healthy gallbladder should support optimal liver function, contributing to the body's ability to eliminate toxins and process nutrients. Toxic overload in the form of chemicals or bacterial endotoxins or mycotoxins or even hormones, as we've already discussed, all need to be cleared from the body. And a backup in the toxic load can be a contributing factor to poor energy, whether that is the combined toxic load from chemicals, bacteria, mycotoxins, and hormones, or just a single issue like mycotoxins, for example. Then the final one is metabolic health. So some research suggests the potential link between the gallbladder and insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is associated with various metabolic issues, including increased risk of type 2 diabetes. Maintaining gallbladder health may contribute to better insulin sensitivity, and poor gallbladder health could be a factor in blood sugar imbalances, which influence energy levels throughout the day, especially energy levels after eating. And if you've been listening to this podcast for some time, you will probably already be aware that I'm quite passionate about the importance of blood sugar health and blood sugar balance in fatigue and chronic illness recovery. It's such a foundational thing that we need to achieve to stabilize the body's physiology. And therefore, if we've got poor gallbladder function influencing our blood sugar regulation, we need to consider how we support the gallbladder and possibly the gut as a whole to achieve better blood sugar stability. And I think I did say that that was the last one, but there's one more, and that is the gallbladder's link with chronic digestive complaints. And this was something that I actually touched on when I talked a little bit about small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Many people with chronic fatigue experience often debilitating digestive complaints. In our practice specifically, we see people with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, so SIBO, or leaky gut, which we refer to as intestinal permeability. And it can often be very difficult to manage, and it can also be an ongoing source of fatigue, low mood, poor health, and everything that comes with it. And often in this case, at least when I'm working with clients coming from other practitioners, the role of the gallbladder has been overlooked. Bile salts, which are produced by the gallbladder and the liver, are involved in regulating inflammation in the gut and the balance of bacteria in the gut. And therefore, the solution might not always be just addressing the bacterial balance using, for example, probiotics, antimicrobials, or taking some L-glutamine for intestinal permeability or leaky gut. But rather, we need to work from north to south. We need to address things that are higher up in the chain of digestion and then work our way down the gut in a very strategic way. This was something I went into a little bit more detail when I did the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So if you are someone who's struggling with recurrent and ongoing digestive complaints and you haven't yet listened to that episode, I'd highly recommend that you do. So we've been through quite a lot already. It's quite an educational podcast. I hope your head isn't hurting too much, but we've looked at what the gallbladder does, its roles. We've looked at what can go wrong. We've looked at risk factors. We've looked at how all of these things link to chronic fatigue. We've also looked at signs and symptoms and how you might know if this is an issue for you. And by this stage, you're either like, no, I don't think this is an issue for me, or you're thinking, what do I need to do about my gallbladder? And that's what we're going to move into next, which is, what can you do if you believe that gallbladder dysfunction is possibly driving your fatigue? Well, the conventional treatment for gallbladder dysfunction is surgery to remove the gallbladder. However, you would need to have evidence of a significant gallbladder issue before your gallbladder would be removed. So we've got people who are going to be in kind of two different camps here. We've got people who've been told they have a gallbladder issue, and they're told their only option is surgery. And that may be the case, and that may be the only possibility in some cases, so not to discount that. But there may be people who are looking to try more natural options before they have an organ removed. And then we've got the other people, the people who are like, I really feel like there's something going on with my gallbladder, but I'm not at the stage where it's being detected in ultrasound. I'm not at the stage where it's being detected in blood work. So how can I support myself when this is something that's not necessarily a medical diagnosis at this point in time? And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about here. So if you still have a gallbladder, the goal is to optimize gallbladder contractility, motility, and ejection of bile. And impaired synthesis of bile salts can lead to bile sludge and gallstones and poor gallbladder contractility, which means that the bile salts are not ejected into the gut, which not only impacts fat digestion and absorption of important fat-soluble nutrients, but also the balance of the microbiome. We can increase gallbladder contractility by using exercise and vagal stimulation, and sometimes further underlying imbalances may need to be addressed. And this is where it can be really helpful to work with a practitioner who can rule these things in or out for you. So for example, brain injury impacting the innervation of the gallbladder and therefore its contractility. Neurodegenerative disease for the same reasons. An underactive thyroid. Chronic inflammation of the intestines can impact gallbladder contractility. Gut neurodegeneration can impact gallbladder contractility. Estrogen dominance, we've already talked about the role of estrogen and hormones in the gallbladder. Medications, specifically those which may contain estrogen like hormone replacement therapy or oral contraceptives, but also things like statins, diuretics, and chronic use of antibiotics. These are the upstream impacts that need to be identified and supported when we're looking at the bigger picture of the individual. Especially where fatigue is concerned, many of our clients have had some sort of brain injury at some point in time, for example, a concussion, or they've had a bad fall, or they've hit their head, and no one's ever really considered that that could be something that's playing into their energy, or an autoimmune thyroid condition, or ongoing gut imbalances. All of these things are, yes, going to impact gallbladder contractility, but they're probably also part of the fatigue picture as a whole. Therefore, we need to consider everything that's going on and how it's interrelated and support the whole person at a pace that is right for them, because obviously it can be overwhelming and we don't want to work on too many things at once. So that would be the first step, is to rule out possible causes of poor contractility. Yes, we can use vagal stimulation, exercising more, which can be tricky if you have fatigue, can be used to help the gallbladder contract. And then we can also consider dietary recommendations. So for example, reducing fats and oils, fried foods, carbohydrates, and sugar. Or we want to just have carbohydrates eaten at the appropriate level, which supports blood sugar control. Now, you might be someone who needs to follow a ketogenic diet. For example, I need to follow a ketogenic diet, but I also had a gallbladder issue. So when we're looking at this, how do I reduce fats and oils? My main piece of advice here was just reducing the fats and oils that can be particularly problematic for health. So definitely want to take out trans fats. We want to take out refined omega-6s. We want to just be conscious of having too much saturated fat, but make sure we're having good amounts of monounsaturated fats like avocado and olive oil, nuts and seeds. And we're having good amounts of omega-3s. We're having some oily fish so that, yes, there might be a little bit of animal fat coming into the diet. That's not a problem. But just the fats that are being eaten are really those that have been shown to be therapeutically beneficial for health. Then we want to think about increasing fiber in the diet, so making sure there's enough plant matter in the diet. Coffee, if it's tolerated for you, can be good for the gallbladder. Otherwise, perhaps green tea. Some people don't even tolerate green tea because of the caffeine, but I love a cup of green tea and I'll drink about 3 cups a day very easily. Bitter foods, so if you're making a salad, you could use bitter leaves like rocket or watercress. Beetroot is also good for the gallbladder, and curcumin and ginger. So I've had clients who know they need to work on their gallbladder and they'll juice some ginger and juice some turmeric root and then take it like a little bit of a shot, maybe with some lemon juice in the morning. And that can be great for the gallbladder, or you know, take that just before you have a meal. Then we can consider lifestyle management. And here this is tricky because a sedentary lifestyle is a risk factor for gallbladder dysfunction. And movement can be tricky when you have a chronic illness. And there are times in our chronic illness where we just need to rest and stabilize and keep movement to a minimum. But the longer term goal is to be moving more. And even if you get to the stage where you are able to walk, just a 30-minute walk 5 times a week can really make a difference in gallbladder function. This is not to make you despondent and sad that you're not there yet and you can't work on your gallbladder because you can't move. Just move as much as you can within your capacity at the moment, but you can do all the food-related bits. You can rule out the other possible upstream causes of gallbladder contractility issues. And then when the time is right, you can add in the rest. So we can also have nutrients or supplements that may be important for different aspects of gallbladder function, from the contraction and motility of the gallbladder, from ejection of the bile, and also certain supplements can influence estrogen on the gallbladder. So those that promote contraction, motility, and ejection are things like coffee, green tea, ginger, and curcumin, which I already mentioned. And those which promote the metabolism of cholesterol on bile salts are phosphatidyl choline, beetroot extract, taurine, and vitamin C. Those that counteract the negative impact of estrogen on bile flow are milk thistle and dandelion. And then bile salts, particularly ox bile, can be used to dissolve gallstones quite aggressively. It can be quite a strong supplement, so I probably would not recommend that unless you're under the care of a practitioner who can advise. But some of these other things can easily be taken as food sources or can be taken as supplementary to the practices that you are already doing to support your health. The final thing I wanted to touch on is a gallbladder flush. I've seen on various Instagram profiles, various other health practitioners I follow, that some people are big advocates of a gallbladder flush. I personally have never done a gallbladder flush. I feel very curious to try one. If I'm being honest, it's not something that I've got round to yet. But I personally feel that until I have done something myself, it's not something I can recommend to a client. You may have also heard about a gallbladder flush yourself. You may also feel curious about it. But for those of you that don't know what it is, it's more of a naturopathic protocol that involves a mixture of certain substances such as olive oil, citrus juice, and herbs, with the goal of inducing the gallbladder to expel gallstones. And a gallbladder flush, also known as a liver or gallbladder cleanse, is an alternative therapy aimed at eliminating gallstones or promoting overall gallbladder and liver health. And I do believe that some people find this approach very useful, but it is important to note from a research and evidence-based perspective, there isn't a lot of scientific evidence to support that it's helpful. So I would say at this point in time, the jury is not out. Like many things with chronic fatigue, it's important to be open to trying different things, provided they feel safe and you're supported, and see how you feel. It's not something I've personally tried. I'm currently actually working with clients, so I think this could be something we could try that would really help them. But it has to be with understanding of the risk factors involved, and also has to be when somebody feels safe enough and there's enough resilience in their system to do the flush or to do the cleanse. So for now, I'm just supporting my clients with the lifestyle and dietary and supplement and upstream investigations that I've discussed today in this podcast. So I guess just to wrap up here and say that although gallbladder dysfunction may not be a consideration for everyone with chronic fatigue, it can be overlooked in some cases. And if you show signs of fat intolerance in your diet, if you experience hormonal imbalances, if you have an underactive thyroid, if toxic load is an issue for you, if you have unresolved digestive issues, it really is worth considering the gallbladder as you support yourself through your healing experience. And if you feel like this is something that you need more help and support around, I'd love to invite you to reach out to one of our team. I record these podcasts in advance, so by the time this gets published, the situation may change. But at the moment, I'm fully booked until April 2024, but there's a waiting list on the website. We also have the wonderful Francesca Liparotti on the team, who is helping me with the client cases that I'm not able to see straight away. So she's the client-facing practitioner on our various cases, which means she speaks with the client, but then together we collaborate as a team to work on that client support and that client strategy. So you have the benefit of having two practitioners working on your case, not just one. And Francesca is incredible and she's doing an amazing job. So if you do want to get started straight away, there's always the option to work with her. So on that note, I know there's been a very information heavy episode today. So I will allow you to rest your brains, and I wish you a wonderful fatigue recovery day, and I'll see you in the next episode.